Hey everyone, this is Anthony Vasquez, and today I am joined by my amazing guest Priya from Premedy Events. We're going to be bringing you a ton of great information. I had the honor and pleasure of sitting down with Priya for almost an hour. We talked about goals, vision, dreams, how she's going to be the next Indian Martha Stewart. This is an awesome podcast with some great content. Super excited for you to listen to it. Here we go.
Hello everyone. I just want to welcome Priya to our podcast.
Hello.
So excited to have you here. So I just want to start off, if you could just introduce yourself for those of you who may not know you, although everyone should know you, and tell us a little bit about your business, what you focus on.
So my name is Elizabeth Priya Kumar. I am founder and CEO of Premedy Events, which is a luxury event planning company with offices in New York City and in LA. And we are expanding city by city and kind of country by country and kind of taking over specifically in the South Asian market, fusion market, cultural market. And I'm so happy to be here and excited to get to know you guys.
So I think one thing I want to get into right away is when we met, something you said to me really stuck out is I'm a big goal-oriented, like, let's fucking kill it person, right? And I think a lot of times we limit our beliefs on what we can accomplish.
Right.
And you said to me, I'm going to be the Indian Martha Stewart.
I am. And I
believe it, right? Talk to me about that mindset, because I see just following from social and from getting to know you now, there's obviously a mindset behind that and a belief system that you have that is leading you to know that that will be possible one day.
So I think very early on in my career, I recognized that there were so many people that, you know, started businesses, and a lot of these, even brides, woke up one day and were like, oh, I planned my own wedding. That was so cool. Let me turn into a wedding planner. And I think you have people that do it for the short-term goal of, I'm a wedding planner. And I had to change my mindset from I'm a wedding planner to a business owner and an entrepreneur. Those are two completely different things. And so when I realized that, you know, you had this Martha Stewart, you had like a Rachel Ray, you had, you know, kind of like an Ellen, you had people in these lifestyle brands spaces. There was no one really doing it for the cultural community of South Asians. And so I said, first of all, that could totally be me. Like, I'm cool enough to do this. And then the mindset that kind of went, you know, along with that was more so, I had divided my life up into buckets. And I basically said, there's going to be a financial bucket. There's going to be a personal bucket. There's going to be a physical bucket. There's going to be a spiritual bucket. There's going to be all these buckets that I want to, you know, achieve goals in. And, you know, let's say on my physical bucket, it was, hey, I wanted to lose 15 pounds. Okay. I knocked that out of my bucket, and then that bucket became empty. So I'm like, okay, now I'm going to run a 5K. And then when that gets over, then it's, I'm going to add something new to that bucket. So that's what kind of keeps the mindset going, is that no bucket should ever be empty, because you should constantly be learning and growing and elevating. But yeah, I'm going to totally be fucking Martha. Like, like, I'm going to be her. Like, well, I mean, come on.
Give me some of the things you're doing right now in the moment that set yourself up for those goals, right? So we're going to go big first, right? So we're talking, that's a big goal, right?
Yeah.
And totally achievable. But I know you're doing some things. I was just invited to your launch party in LA, which I think inherently is, from a business standpoint, knowing your industry, and in the South Asian market, obviously New York, LA makes total sense, right? Mm-hmm. So I know that that's the next step there. I'm assuming in the back of your mind, there's probably some products in the works as well. So,
you know, we have offices in New York, and I realized that, you know, I get bored easy. So I was like, okay, I kind of been in New York, and then the business kind of went nationwide about 4 years ago. So I was like, wait, you know, I really want to do LA, and maybe I can create this atmosphere of like summers in New York and winters in LA, and kind of just have this lifestyle that's amazing. So opening up a new office in LA, with that being said, opening up, having a huge launch party for that, where there will be tons of influencers and celebrities and, you know, kind of the who's who of the wedding industry present as well, have some amazing creative partners on board to design this and bring it to life. And from that being said, you know, we're also going to be moving into announcing our product line, which is called Pradari. And Pradari is basically, what I found is, now that I'm in my 30s, I mean, teens. now that I am in my 30s, I noticed that as a entrepreneur, as someone that is limited on time, I'm constantly on flights every week. How do I entertain in a way that I would love to entertain? And so I realized, okay, I'm past the age of going to the clubs. Like, I'm past the age of like raging all night because I just don't recover for like a week, you know? So how can I make my at-home experience a really, really cool experience? And so what I realized is friends would start inviting me over for dinner. So now I have people inviting me over for dinners, and we're all sitting around the table and having great conversation and great wine and great food. Well, we're all eating on basic bitch plates. And I was like, why is everybody like, we're accomplished individuals. Why am I sitting there eating on like a Target plate or like a Crate and Barrel plate? Like, I'm better than Crate and Barrel. Like, you know what I mean? And not to say there's anything wrong with Crate and Barrel, but I think it's because we're stuck between Crate and Barrel and Vera Wang China. Mm-hmm. And I'm not at the point in my life where I want Vera Wang China because I don't have this big opulent home and I'm, you know, not married yet with kids and I'm not, you know, it's not a registry list. It's not those things, but I am sitting with really cool creative people at the table. So I designed this amazing line of, essentially, eclectic China, which has really, really awesome inspired prints on it. And I've worked with a lot of independent artists to basically get their prints on my plates. And so imagine, you know, a hip hop line with hip hop lyrics and graffiti print and, you know, it was all a dream on a plate. And now what you've done is you've created the art of conversation mm-hmm. at dinner. So the whole tagline of this new product line is going to be the art of dinner. Mm-hmm. And it's literally art on your plates, and it's creating conversation and limited quantities only so that people feel a little bit more exclusive and you feel connected to the artist and you feel connected to, you know, what they believe in and what they stand for and what they were inspired by when making that piece.
Very cool. So you just mentioned something. So something that drives me nuts is when I talk to people in the wedding industry, whether they're coming to me for advice, like how do I grow my business, or something I hear way too much is my market's oversaturated. Mm-hmm. So there's too much competition in my marketplace, which to me is bullshit because the cream always rises to the top.
I agree.
And if you want to be excellent, that's the easiest way to differentiate yourself from the middle of the pack.
Right.
So if you want to be the top 5%, just produce a product that is so far superior to everybody
Absolutely.
Else. You notice that, right? But something you said was you took your brand global, right? Global or national global, which now it's not just a New York wedding planner. You might be a New York based event planner, but I follow your Instagram. You're never actually in the city of New York for longer than like 72 hours
yep.
if you have a wedding. So I know St. Louis recently, right?
St. Louis, Kansas City, Miami, Chicago, Austin.
Which I think the beautiful part is you've tapped into a market nationally that has money.
Yep.
They're willing to spend, and it's not just limited. You know, if you said, I'm just going to do South Asian weddings in New York City, you limit yourself geographically
Absolutely.
Now to how many weddings can you have. But when you say I'm going to do that nationally, there's money all over the United States.
Absolutely.
And just because it might not be a tier A city like Chicago, New York, or LA, there's a limiting belief there. You said, screw that, I'm going to go for it anyway.
Of course. And I think some of the biggest weddings I've done, and I mean biggest in terms of revenue generators, like where they're multi-million dollar weddings, are actually not happening in New York. And they're not actually happening in LA. They're actually happening in the Midwest, because the Midwest is kind of that quiet money. They don't really talk about it, and you would never think that they have it. But, you know, some of the bigger portfolios that I have are coming out of cities that I would have never thought. And I think when you produce a product that we are, you know, luxury, you know, bespoke event planners catering to an Indian client that, for lack of a better way of saying this, they're American girls who happen to be Indian. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, if I was to get married, I was born and raised in Jersey, moved to New York, you know, went to college in New York, who would be my wedding planner? And it wouldn't be someone who's like an older auntie. It wouldn't be someone who's, you know, from India, because I wouldn't connect with them. It wouldn't necessarily be someone who's full-blown American, because I would have, you know, some small innuendos of them understanding jokes and culture. And so who is that person that understands, is American-born, American-raised, understands the language, understands things, and understands the nuances, but it's still cool, you know, and it's still relatable and it's still American. So I needed to create who would be my wedding planner. And that's exactly what I'm doing for my brides.
And when you go in there, I think you say luxury, right? So I think that's the most overused term right now.
I agree.
Everyone says they're in the luxury market, and there's very few people actually playing in the word luxury.
Sure.
I think there's a difference between middle, high end, and then luxury would be the top of that, right?
Sure.
So if you could break down, like, because I see the weddings you do, that is luxury. When somebody's spending seven figures, $1+ million, now you're really in an elite 1%
sure.
class. Those aren't your everyday weekend weddings.
Sure. For me, I think there's tiers, there's levels. And I think for me, anything above, $500,000 for me is considered luxury, because those are not normal budgets. And I think anything above $1 million, which I think in today's American market is a little bit rare. Mm-hmm. Anything above $1 million is like super luxury.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, all the weddings that we do are in that luxury, super luxury space. And then do we have occasional people that are spending $250 on a wedding or $300 on a wedding? Absolutely. Because for us, it's, hey, if you can pay our fee, you're willing to kind of... You're willing to massage other areas to make it work with us. And we value those clients just as much. And we have tiers to, hey, this is a job that Priya will be at versus this is a job that Priya will not be at, because now we've cultivated a brand where I don't need to be at every single wedding. And my staff is more than capable to be able to run a wedding without me. And a lot of my role now is the vision behind it.
Sure.
And my team is more the execution behind it. So I'm the dreamer, they're the doers.
So, from a cultural perspective, my understanding of Indian families and culture is that you either grow up to be one of two things, a lawyer or a doctor.
Yep.
And now you've trumped that and said, I'm going to do my own thing.
Right.
So can you just talk about some of maybe, I don't know how your family was in accepting that. It was like, well, I'm going to be a wedding planner. You're like, no, I'm going to be the Martha Stewart of wedding planning. Right. So does that change it or?
So it was a little bit of a difficult journey for me. Love you, mom and dad. All good.
Not happy, mom and dad. They wanted the best.
You know? I was originally in the Doctor of Pharmacy program at St. John's University in New York. And going into my senior year, I basically said, nope, I don't think this is for me. And my parents were like, nope, this is definitely for you. We just spent all this money on school for you and you need to do this. And I'm like, nope. I just think that I have a super big personality and I have a really creative brain. And I thought that I was, meant for something bigger. And so when I told my parents this, they were obviously devastated. It was like, I told them I was dying and they had a really hard time accepting it. I became like a waitress at Fridays and that pissed them off even more. Like, you're ruining your life. And like, I'm going to figure it out. It's going to work. And I changed my major to marketing and graduated at the top of my class. And at the time, my uncle, was an executive at Avaya, which is a telecommunications company. And Avaya networks a lot of analyst conference and the World Cup and a lot of disaster relief for Hurricane Katrina. So they're very well connected into a lot of these other partnerships. And I was able to land a job on the PR and PR marketing team. And so how that ended up happening, I loved it. And I said, oh, this is so fast paced. I love talking to people. I love meeting people. And so basically decided, my whole 20s, I would then change every 2 years my industry, but keep the job function the same. So essentially, you're a photographer, you can shoot corporate, you can shoot babies, you can shoot weddings, you can shoot mitzvahs. You're just choosing which lane you want to be in. And so I said, okay, let me do healthcare. Let me do nonprofit. Let me do fashion. Let me do finance. And by the time I'm 30, I'll pick the career that I want to be in, the industry, and run with it. And then when I was 26, my brother and my sister were like, hey, you're really good at this like marketing event planning thing. And, at 26, they were like, hey, why don't you start your own thing? And I was like, are you fucking crazy?
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know what to wear in the morning. It takes me 20 minutes. Now you want me to run a company? And they're like, well, if it takes off, you have the potential to be the next Indian Martha Stewart. And if it doesn't take off, then you can be, going back to corporate. And so I decided that I would take a chance. I named the company Premony, which is my brother's middle name and my sister's middle name combined. So my brother's middle name is Prem and my sister's middle name is Padmini. Combined it to make Premony. Started the company, and Prem means love, Mini means little, so it's a little love. And so started the company, and we're going almost on 10 years now and have now triumphed to this 1% of the wedding industry of doing the most luxury Indian weddings in the space and fusion weddings. And we've even done American weddings. We've just kind of expanded to new heights.
So I think one thing that you point out really well is people always, I'm a big believer, people only see the end result of yes. the work, right? So they see where you are now at whatever the age may be,
yes.
right? Whereas that journey, 16. So whereas that journey started, you know, when you said, I'm not going to follow what my parents should have told me to do. I'm gonna do something different. That really is my passion. But then I'm also going to learn and educate myself post-education by getting these random jobs, right? In different fields that now built the person you are today. But I think most importantly, I'm a big believer of eating shit until you, because it builds character, right?
Of course.
So working at TGI Fridays,
yep.
probably the most unglorious job, but
the worst.
Those things,
but the best.
those are the formative things that you've done that bring you to where you are today.
Yes.
And then people now looking in only see Priya, this yes. refined business, launching dinnerware yeah. and planning $1 million weddings. But there's so much work from, you know, point A to point B, where
yes.
you are now. And I think that often gets overlooked.
Absolutely.
And to me, that's really what we need to look at and say, okay, that's really the secret to success, is that this has been a 12-year or 13-year journey, maybe longer, right? We're going to say it started really when you were a senior in college. So it's 15 years or yeah. however how long it is to this point.
Yeah.
Whereas I think millennials are fighting this right now is, you know, you come out of college at 21 years old, and you don't have the foresight to say, hey, it's really going to take a little bit of time.
Yeah.
And I need to be somewhat patient during that journey, and switching jobs every 3 months, or it's not
right.
So if I can get an internship with Priya and I can stay there 6 months to a year, actually learn, parlay that into my next job, maybe in corporate
right.
America, then come back to event planning, that might be the road to get me to where I am today.
Exactly. I think for me, it was a really, really different journey, only because I was entering an industry that I knew nothing about. So I didn't know anything about, I knew about event planning from my corporate jobs, but I didn't know event planning of how to run a business. A little secret about me, guys, is although I'm Indian, I'm actually Christian.
Mm-hmm.
So the weddings that I'm doing are Hindu mm-hmm. or Muslim mm-hmm. or mixed, and I didn't grow up in that world. So mm-hmm. if I was to get married, I would be wearing a white dress, doing the church and a reception like a normal American
sure.
family. So when I went into this Indian world, you know, I didn't speak the language. I didn't even know what a mandap was.
Mm.
I didn't know what a puja was. I didn't know. I just thought an Indian wedding was an Indian wedding, not realizing there are like Punjabis, there are Gujaratis, there are Sindhis, there are different parts of India, and they all do their weddings completely different. So when I tell you that I'm 100% self-taught, I'm 100% self-taught. And now just by looking at someone's last name, I know exactly what kind of wedding they're going to have. And so I think the hunger to never stop learning. I think the hunger to, okay, I don't know that. It's not like a give up. I don't know that. It's you keep pushing and you keep doing it, because that's the only way you're going to rise to the top, right? The people that are like, no, I'll do it tomorrow, or it's not a big deal, or the people that make excuses, or I don't know. I think a lot of the people that push this whole work-life balance, when you want to get to the top, there is no such thing as a work-life balance, because it kind of consumes you and it is your life, because it's not really work to you. It's your passion, and it's what has made you, and all these challenging situations with clients. And I'm like, oh my God, I have a bride freaking out upstairs. Where's the groom? Is he like drunk with his groomsmen? Oh my God, there's an elephant outside taking a bath. And
but
like,
there literally is an elephant outside.
There's literally an elephant outside. And I'm like,
for people who've never been to an Indian wedding,
yes.
they're like, there really is a live elephant outside.
There really is a live elephant or a live horse. And like, I'm just getting pulled in 80 million directions. There's 800 people running around. So
and
it's
you
like,
need permits.
And you need to get permits. You need to get cops. You need to get clearance. Like, at what point did I think in my career at Fridays that like I was gonna have to put elephant needs a bath on an itinerary? Like, that was not even a thing in my head. And you learn as you go. And I mean, I can confidently say now, after doing some very, very notable weddings of, you know, just very, very important industry people, to now see the girl that was scared to kind of approach her parents, to like, oh, I don't want to do this anymore, to the girl who was like bussing tables at Fridays, to the girl who was, you know, working corporate jobs and just trying to figure out how to plan and how to, you know, market myself, to now building this brand that has kind of taken off, and it's now nationwide and now turning global and now adding products. It's only because there's a difference between working your business or being in your business or being on top of your business and looking down at, okay, I don't want to be just another forgotten wedding planner. I want to be a visionary. I want people talking about me. You know, Martha Stewart could die tomorrow and everyone would still know who she is, you know? And she started with a catering business and now turned into an empire. So how do I do that for my generation or my culture? Because there is no one doing it. And if I could be that voice, I think it'd be amazing.
What would be one piece of advice the Priya of today could give the 21-year-old Priya?
Don't take things too personally. I think early on in my career, and I think the biggest one is you can't put a price on sanity. You can't put a price on sanity. Early in my career, I was just taking any bride because I wanted to build the portfolio. I wanted to build the business. And I realized that, you know, when I there was one particular bride that I had that was so overwhelming that was calling me 30 times a day. And if an email.
Never happened.
Yeah. And like, you know, if an email wasn't answered within an hour, it was, you know, all havoc would break loose. And for me, setting boundaries is very important. I think realizing when it's not your client, it's not your client. And it's okay if it's not your client.
And I think the clients, to add on that, the clients you do not take are more important than the clients you do take.
Exactly. And you know, this happened very early on in my career, and it just happened again I'd say 3 months ago, where we booked a really high profile wedding at the Plaza, and it was a wonderful couple. But we just realized our working styles were completely different, and they really needed a planner that could be there for them on the weekends. And obviously, I'm working weekends, you know, doing crazy jobs. And so we just realized we're not a good fit, and I returned their money and wished them all the best. And you have to know when it's your fit and when it's not, because it will make you go so much harder for that client. You will give you, you know, I tell people, if I have to leave my family and friends for a week or a weekend, you know, to be with your friends and family, you need to feel like friends and family to me, because I'm on a plane every 3 days at this point. And so I'm living out of a suitcase, and I want to be able that when I'm with you, I don't feel like it's work. And so I've cultivated that brand where, you know, I make 20 new best friends a year. Like, my brides are the coolest brides. I go on vacation with them now. And like, you know, they come over and they have sleepovers with me. And it's like, it's just a totally different atmosphere that I try to cultivate.
And I think what you're saying is really important, because the clients, let's say you just take a client on for monetary purposes. That's the client that, if it's not right for you, things may not go as they planned.
Right.
And maybe what they planned is completely unrealistic, right, which a lot of times I think is the case. But that's also the client that's going to say to all their friends that they weren't happy with your services. Right. So the damage they do to your brand and your business,
exactly,
is actually, so you take that money now. I always say you're selling now for tomorrow.
Of course.
And you take that money now, but you just lost the future revenue tomorrow.
Absolutely.
And what you did, I think, is really the brilliant thing to do is, hey, I love you guys. We're just not right for each other.
Absolutely.
But you do that prior to the that bad experience. So now they can walk away and say, hey, we were going to use Priya. We just weren't a right fit.
Absolutely.
She's amazing. And she did the stand-up thing by giving us our money back. She may have even referred a friend who could assist us in a better way. But there's still future potential. And ironically, in my business, I think I've gotten some of my best referrals from clients who haven't used us.
Same.
Because they've gone and walked away and used a different studio and maybe weren't happy with what they received. And
absolutely.
I said, you know what? We should have used Anthony Vasquez Photography. We didn't, but you should.
Absolutely. And I've found that too, that some people that may not, you know, couldn't afford us or we weren't within their budgets, I still get referrals from them and say, oh my God, like, you know, she didn't use you, but she said you were wonderful. And if she had the budget, she would have used you. So energy doesn't lie. You know, it doesn't lie. I think within 5 minutes, you know if someone's a shitty person or not. And I think you know if it's a good fit for you or not. And I think, you know, as we age and as we perfect our craft, you know, people always say, you know, it took you 10 or 15 or 20 years to learn how to do whatever you do in 30 minutes. Before, it may have taken you 8 hours, but now you've perfected your craft. So you're not paying me. When they ask you why your prices are so high, I'm like, you're not paying me for the fact that I can get it done quick. You're paying me for the 10 or 15 years that I spent learning how to get it done in a half an hour. So I think, you know, it's just evolution, evolving, growing, finding new ideas. You have to compete with your own business.
So there's a story I love about Picasso where he scribbles something on a napkin and the woman sees it and she goes, I want to buy it from you. And Picasso goes, well, it's $100,000. The woman replies back, $100,000. Oh my God. You just took seconds to write that. He goes, no, this took a lifetime to make.
Right.
And you know, what you're saying is, you know, people come in here sometimes and they go, yeah, I really want a big discount. You know, and I'm like, that's not how it works. You know, you're paying me. And they're like, oh, well, you're just working 10 hours. And I love how they put that word just in 10 hours. I'm like, first off, it is not just 10 hours.
Right.
I have a studio, a staff, a team here, rent, overhead. Plus, I've been doing this for 22 years now. There's a certain level that you get to, and it's my time, my expertise is worth a certain dollar value.
Right.
And if we don't value ourselves like that and set the pricing, well, then why would our clients value us?
Right. And I think, you know, I always tell brides, you know, do you go into Gucci and you negotiate? I don't think so. So why are you negotiating with me? And I also cultivate this, like, we want to work hard for you. And when you diminish our value, you know, and with Indian clients especially, you have to know right off the bat that that's just the way that they are and they're going to negotiate. So we've already, you know, have like an incentive list in the back of our head of saying, oh, you know what, maybe we can't reduce the price, but, you know, we'll help you put together your invites, or, you know, we'll do something else to massage the package, depending on, you know, obviously the package and how many days that they're, you know, signing up for, because ours are not just one day events. They're two, three, four. I'm gone for a whole week working. You know, production might start. This crazy wedding that we did in Kansas City, the production started on Monday and the wedding wasn't until Saturday. So it's like you're there for a whole week overseeing, making sure things are okay. And I just like to have fun. I don't want to feel like it's work. You know, we're making jokes. We're laughing. You know, we're making sure the vendors are fed and everyone's good. Like it's just a different type of vibe that you have to create when you feel like you're building a brand because you want people to want to work with you.
And I think for what you're saying is like, is knowing your value, but also knowing going into these weddings, for people who don't understand Indian weddings, right? They're not just 8 hours. As a matter of fact, they're multiple, sometimes 15, 16 hour days.
Yes.
And so you could potentially just in the week of the wedding without the pre, right? Could be 100 hours from Monday to Monday, because then it's not just, it's Saturday, maybe brunch Sunday to finish off. Mm-hmm. But then there's breakdown, wrap up, clients. And if you're flying out to a city on Monday and you're starting, there's so many aspects to that. If you just charge somebody what a normal 10 hour day would be, when you factor that out over 7 days, I'd argue you'd probably be making minimum wage at that point.
Absolutely.
If you didn't say, hey, listen, you know, I need to be there for 6 days. I'm not going to sleep from Friday to Saturday to make sure your event is off the charts. And not to mention for people, again, who don't know Indian weddings, maybe 500 to 800 people in a lot of these parties.
Absolutely. And I have to bring, it's almost like I have to bring a SWAT team of planners to like make sure that every area is covered. Like someone with the bride, someone with the groom, someone with the priest. Who's with the elephant? You know what I mean? Like,
again, the elephant.
The elephant. I don't know why he thinks he needs to steal the show all the time or like why he's the main attraction, but it's just, there's so many moving parts and things are happening simultaneously. So it's not like I can be in 8 areas at the same time. So there's this, it's a lot of moving parts and, you know, I now know that if I can do 1,000-person 5-day Indian wedding, I can do anything. Yes. Throw anything at me. You want to throw me that church wedding with the 8 hours? Yeah, great, I'll do it.
It's a walk in the park.
It's a walk in the park.
Something I want to ask you about is managing clients' expectations. A couple of things. When you have 800 people at a wedding, when you have clients spending $500,000 plus, expectations become exponentially higher.
Absolutely.
Right? So you need to, number one, manage those expectations, but now supersede their expectations. People that at that level, in my opinion, don't want to just have their expectations met. They want to walk away and say, holy shit, that was the most incredible fucking weekend of my life and Priya killed it.
Yep.
And I see that because on Sunday morning, there's always a mom hugging you on social media, right? They're kissing you and loving you. And then somehow you're always at their house at some point later on for dinner, right? So talk to me about, tell me, like, how are you going into these things where clients have these expectations and now you're superseding that expectation?
So I think what's really important, what we've cultivated with our brand, is to know how to make people feel good. And human first, client second. And I think when you just ask somebody, how's your day going? I don't just sit down and I'm like, let's talk about the wedding. It's like, how's your day going? How's work? What's new? And what I realized is that our clients now talk to us more as friends than as business. And so now I've started to, even throughout the events, I'll come up with a plate of food and I'm like, hey, eat something. I didn't see you ate. Hey, here's a drink. I'll pull them onto the dance floor and start dancing with them. I think when you break that professional barrier, we're not in a corporate to corporate business. It's business to emotional. It's it's an emotional setting, right? So you have to remember, like, they're also like, wow, my daughter's getting married and like this is my baby girl. And all the attention is on the bride, but then who's actually giving the attention to the mom? And maybe the mom wasn't able to have a wedding like this. right? Maybe she was, you know, born and raised in India. She came to this country trying to make a life for herself. Her and her husband slaved away to become doctors or lawyers or IT or whatever, and could have never dreamed to have this wedding. And now the American dream is giving their child this wedding. And so there's so many mixed emotions because, you know, the mom is almost living through the daughter, number one. Number two, the mom is like, wow, my daughter is like, you know, I've worked so hard just to be able to do this, especially in the Indian culture. I can tell my mom that I've been featured in 20 magazines. I can tell my mom that I've won multiple awards for Planner of the Year of multiple associations. I can tell my mom, wow, I did the CEO of Nike's daughter's wedding. I can tell my mom all of these things. My mom will be like, but you're not married. So, and I'm like, damn it. Like, you know, it's like to Indian parents, that is the ultimate success to say my kids got married. And like, I was able to, and I don't even think it's an Indian thing. I think it's a cultural thing, you know, that they feel like their generation will now go on and they've worked so hard for that generation and it's going to keep continuing to go forward. So I think making them feel and understanding those cultural nuances, making them feel good, making them comfortable. And I think cultivating that before the wedding even happens. Like, I'll say to my bride's mom, hey, just want to take you out for drinks. See how you're feeling about things. Let's not talk about the wedding. I'm already setting the blueprint for what it's going to be like after the wedding.
If you could, looking back on your life, and I'm 23 years old. I graduated college a year ago. And something sparked an interest in me to become a wedding planner. Mm-hmm. Right? Give me like a breakdown of roadmap of advice you would give 23-year-old person a year out of college. They want to become a wedding planner.
I would be like, don't do it. No, I'm kidding. I'd be like, are you sure you want this life? I think knowing the expectations, your clients work during the day, which means they're only going to hang out with you in the evening and weddings are on weekends. Mm-hmm. Are you prepared to give up your weddings, your weekends? And are you prepared to give up your evening?
And not just evenings. We'll talk about all the paperwork and emails you're going through during the day.
During the day. Yeah. It's like you still work during the day, but now you're just doing FaceTime at night.
Yeah.
So, okay, are you prepared to give up your evenings and weekends? Do you have, if you're planning on getting married or having kids, do you have a supportive person in your life that's going to understand that lifestyle? Okay. Are you going to be okay with missing a lot of special moments in your life? I can't tell you how many friends' weddings I've missed, how many special moments I've missed. My friends are at the beach in the summer and I'm like, I can't go. I have to work a wedding. You're going to sacrifice a lot. And are you prepared for that?
If your mom's birthday falls on the weekend, you have a wedding, mom's birthday's not going to celebrate until Tuesday.
Exactly. You know, and at the end of the day, my clients book me out a year in advance. It's not like I can change that. I would say to my 23-year-old self, have a lot more fun. Have a lot more fun because I think, you know, sometimes I'm so focused, like we have to do this, we have to do this and deliverables and I want to expand here and I want to do this. And then I forget, like, you know, let me just take a couple hours and just chill and just, you know, sometimes the best creativity comes when you least expect it. I think be prepared to learn a lot about yourself because you will interact with so many different types of people. You will deal with a bride who is maybe very emotional and very anxious. You'll deal with a groom who maybe is less involved and doesn't really give a shit. You'll deal with anxious parents because they're the ones cutting the checks. And dad's like, hey, how much does this cost? How much does this cost? How much does this cost? You have mom who's trying to vicariously live through her daughter. You have vendors or creative partners that are so involved and they want to get their timelines done and their deliverables done. Then you have 800 guests that are just swarming and, you know, asking you, where's the bathroom? Where's the next buffet? You know, this food station needs this or whatever the case may be. I think you will learn a lot about yourself and you will learn a lot about what you... I can only say now that the past 10 years of being in this business has developed my moral compass to such a different level where if it doesn't feel right in my gut or if it doesn't feel right with that creative partner and that vendor, I'm not doing it. I've worked with some of the best photographers in the world who were just not nice to be around. And I'm like, wow. So now I'm again leaving my friends and family for a weekend to hang out with this bride who I love, but the vendor is like mean and not nice and not pleasant to work with and cursing or not treating people with kindness. And you're just like, that's not the atmosphere that I want to cultivate. And at the end of the day, like I'm the ultimate producer of this event, ultimate producer. Like I am involved in every single part. I'm not just involved in photo or video or decor or invitations. I'm involved in everything. And so if I'm this overall event curator, I get to set the tone for the kind of energy that it brings. So if I don't bring this loving, kind, beautiful, good juju atmosphere, then what does it matter?
1,000%.
Everyone will feel it.
Yeah, I mean, when we work with sometimes, or I should say when I get stuck with certain people on jobs, which happens, right?
Of course.
We don't love every wedding planner. For us, it's almost like you have anxiety because the wedding planner is crazier than the bride was. And now you're not just managing the bride, but you're managing the wedding planner who's making the bride and the mother even more anxious than they already are.
Absolutely.
Instead of doing the opposite, which is diffusing the situation.
Of course. And I think that's why it's really important to work with people that, you know, you are who you are because you have 22 years under your belt. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. Just go. You know, my job is to make sure everything runs smoothly. If there are hiccups or issues, come to me, talk to me, we'll resolve it. But I'm not going to tell you how to do your job.
Sure.
You got the timeline. You can read. Go.
So right now, I know you got a lot of things going on, right? So planning some big weddings. We're launching LA in June. We are working on a dinnerware company, right?
Yep.
That's today. Give me a year. Where do I see Priya a year from now? Where do I see Priya 5 years from now? And I don't know if we can go bigger than that at this point, but if you want, give me, you know, where do I see Priya in 10 years?
So a year from now, if he's lucky, I'll be married. You know.
So we're talking engagement, marriage within a year.
What we're thinking, no pressure. We're just letting you know, you know, there's a line waiting outside, you know, so take a number.
Mom's on me.
I think in a year, you know, obviously the LA office is, that was this year's project. I think within the next 2 to 3 years, you know, we're trying to see if we can do London. There's a huge, huge Indian population there. So we're trying to, you know, do London, maybe a little bit of Paris, that whole European, market. And, you know, launching Pradari, you know, by next year. We're going to be doing a lot of, you know, beta testing of a lot of the plates and sending samples out and seeing, you know, who, like, how does it work for you? Are you getting the buzz? Like, you know, how's it working out? And I think the ultimate goal, which is kind of really, really something that's in my heart is to be able to have a platform to speak openly about being, you know, a first generation kid growing in this country now, you know, essentially conquering the American dream and developing probably a talk show, of being the next Martha and having some on-air presence. As you can already tell, I'm great for TV. I don't know if you guys picked that up. But just wanting to create an atmosphere of awareness. And I have a lot of ideas on where this show could go. I was never thought of being a reality show girl. Mm-hmm. I think there's a certain lane for that. And I think the vibe that I want to create is, like you said, talking about the struggles versus the glory. When people introduce me, they say, oh, this is Priya from Premini Events. She's this $1 million wedding planner and she's traveled the world and she does, you know, she's done all these notable people's weddings and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But no one's like, oh, this is Priya who at 26 years old started a company with $200 in her pocket, didn't even know what an Indian wedding was, couldn't speak the language. And oh yeah, by the way, her dad's a reverend. And you know, it was just layers upon layers of nobody knowing the real story. And I've had some really, really difficult times. I remember the first $1 million wedding I've ever planned was the week that essentially my almost engagement was called off. And so, you know, for me to have to go into an atmosphere where I had to give this client my all and, you know, I see them and they're exchanging vows and I'm literally in a corner, like tearing up and going to the bathroom and having to pull it together. It's like, those are the things that you don't see, you know, with a wedding planner. And there's so many moments like that where, you know, I've had death in the families and I've had, you know, my dad being sick or my mom being sick or, you know, some big tragedy happening.
No one fucking cares.
And no one cares. And you just have to pull it together. And I remember it was the first wedding I had ever done at the Plaza. And it's like a wedding planner's mecca, right? If you said you did a wedding at the Plaza in New York City, you've made it, you know? And it was my first one and I was so excited. I was like, oh my God. And we had Refinery 29 covering the whole entire thing and there's film crews and camera crews. And at that wedding, I get a call, hey, they just signed the DNR for grandma. You need to come right now. like, you need to come right now. And I'm like, I can't come. Like, I literally can't come. Like, we're opening doors and the bride is about to walk in. Like, I can't come. And I will never forget that day because it showed my resilience to my dedication to my clients and me waiting for the wedding to be, you know, in a good place where the dancing had kicked off and things were in motion and everything was settled for me to finally be able to leave. This industry tests you.
And I think it's going to sound twisted, but by not leaving, even though maybe we should have, I've been in situations like that before and I've done the same thing you have. It's totally twisted though. When you think about it in the grand scheme, like,
yes,
grandma's passing away. Like, yeah. My grandmother passed away at 11 a.m. I went and tried a wedding at 12. What do you do? To me, it's easier just to go do that than to call the bride and say, hey, I can't make it. But I think in the long term, when you extrapolate that over a long period of time, that's what differentiates someone like yourself who's going to make it in this industry or who's going to make it in general in life, in business, versus the person who walked out that door that
day. Absolutely.
And the easier thing to do is, no doubt, and maybe, you know, we can go back and forth morally, what's the right thing to do in that right. situation, but you just can't. And I think people take that for granted. In the event industry, I think one thing that we as event industry professionals don't get enough credit for are those kind of scenarios.
Absolutely.
Which happen more often than we talk
and
about.
And nobody knows.
And nobody knows.
Silent battles.
Yep.
Like I say, I have won the battle today and I did it silently. And at the end of the day, in that situation, there was already disparity going on. There was already heartache going on. There was already so much going on. Why was I going to cause more by saying, I couldn't come? I have to leave your wedding. Why was I going to add more? Although she would understand, and I get it, like, people are like, my brides are such amazing people. She'd be like, go, go, go. It's fine.
So we talked about, right, so not leaving weddings. We talked about play companies. So we're thinking a TV show at some point.
We are. We're thinking, we've been in touch with a few, daytime talk producers just to feel it out and just to see, you know, what this could be. And I think, a really, really big avenue could be a whole, you know, pivoting with Priya concept where you actually sit and we get to know each other and maybe interviews aren't done so, candid, you know, like this. Maybe we're on a roller coaster going down and I'm like, tell me the person who just broke your heart, you know, and you scream it going down a roller coaster. I think, I think what a lot of people associate with me is although I'm in a luxury market, I'm luxury relatable. I'm the girl who will carry a YSL bag or a Chanel bag, but then be eating chicken and rice at the end of the night. Or I'm the girl who, we'll do this $1 million wedding, but we'll show up to the brunch the next day wearing Converses. And I think that's what I attract. And I think that's exactly my bride. It's not the bride that is like, look at my Gucci, look at my Louis, look at my private jet, look at this. That's not my bride. My bride is, and not that there's anything wrong with that bride. I think there's a wedding planner that suits every type of need. I think for me, I just want an absolutely ridiculously fun experience. So if we're planning something fun, why aren't we making it fun?
So you found your niche.
I found my niche.
Any aspiration to go outside that niche?
I think when you have the three components of the business where you have one that's, you know, doing these luxury events, you have one that is, you know, product, and then you have one where me now turning into the face of being, you know, a TV, you know, brand. I think those are the three buckets that we've kind of segmented the business in. And so you have this Pradari aspect, which is product. You have the Premini aspect, which is throwing luxury events, whether they're birthday parties or weddings or mitzvahs or, you know, American weddings or fusion weddings or anniversary parties or, you know, everybody can throw a party for any reason, right? And then you have this TV presence, which I feel like from a very young age, I've always known that was the eventual goal for me to have something on TV, whether it was, you know, a show, whether it was a lifestyle brand, whether it was, you know, interviewing people in ridiculous situations. I think I think those three components are the next phase.
And I think what's beautiful about what you're saying is you're not all over the place. They're very specific.
They're very specific.
And they're also all in line with one another. So there's not like you're talking about, I want to do Hawaiian luau's.
Yeah.
No. It's like, I'm going to be luxury South Asia wedding market. I am going to do high-end dinnerware.
Yeah.
And they all fall within that, right?
Exactly.
And I think that is the, in a lot of ways, the key to success because they're all, you know, vertically integrated right into one another.
And you just know what you want. Like, we're too old to say, I don't know. lot of people are like, oh, where's your business going to be next year? I don't know. But like, what are you going to be like in 5 years? Like, I don't know. What's like, if you don't put a goal, if you're like, oh, I'm going to go to the gym with no goal of losing 5 pounds or 10 pounds, like what is the ultimate goal? If you don't write it down, then where are you going to be? And it's also like speaking it into existence, you know, what do you want to do? Like, where do you want to be in 5 years? You know, it's like you have to say it, tell the universe, hey God.
Are you a daily journal?
I am not. I am not a daily journal, but I do talk to myself pretty often.
And how do you go about setting goals?
Usually I kind of cultivate it in the very beginning of the year and I'll make, okay, this is the projection map of what I'm thinking. But I'm a very signs oriented person. And even the fruition of me making LA, I didn't have LA in my mind last year. The fruition of LA came in 1 month in December when I saw all the signs pointing to LA. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to open up LA. And then all of a sudden we booked our wedding, our first wedding in LA. And then all of a sudden this launch came about. And then all these creative partners started stepping up and all the puzzle pieces just started working. And, you know, my mother from a very, very young age was, if it works out and it's easy, it was meant for you. If it's so hard, it's not meant for you.
Sometimes the marketplace is telling you there's no market, and that's why the resistance is there. And I think sometimes the universe tells us it's meant to be, and it just brings us down that road.
And I think your gut doesn't lie. You know, you already know, you just don't want to listen to it.
So you mentioned something before, family, kids, right? How does that balance into what you have going on right now?
So I have realized throughout my dating career, I just can't believe I called that a career. So my dating life, that I am a very specific type of person that needs a very specific type of man to be able to understand that. It's not easy to be with a girl who's on a flight every 3 days. It's not easy for me to be like, hey, I have to be in LA for all next week. It cultivates insecurity sometimes in people. It cultivates hardship because that person doesn't understand your lifestyle. So now what I have realized is after my career of dating, that I need someone that is also an entrepreneur, that also is at the same level as me when it comes to, hey, I have to be in LA for a week. And they say, okay, no problem. I can work out of LA for a week. Not a big deal. Has the flexibility, the same moral compass. And I think someone who loves love. Because I think if you keep love at the root of everything, then nothing will change.
You mentioned something else before, really, that I'm very passionate about. Talk about being a child of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And I think, without getting political, I think there's obviously a feeling right now or sentiment in the United States where it used to be we cherished the immigrant mentality. Mm-hmm. We cherished what our parents taught us in that sense, right? My father is, I don't know if I can technically use the word immigrant because he's Puerto Rican, which is part of the United States, mm-hmm. but he did come to this country without speaking English. So I feel that it is that immigrant quote-unquote mentality. So we share that in thinking of that, I'm almost jealous of not being an immigrant because there's so much that is to be appreciated for the struggles that our parents face that we'll never experience, right? We were born in this country. We speak the language. We didn't have to overcome those hurdles. In many cases, we're not going to have to worry about putting food on the table for our children. And I think the beauty in that story, though, which is being totally overlooked in our political climate right now, is that is the American dream. And without that, this country really has nothing. Because at the core fundamental belief of who we are as Americans is we are a country of immigrants and the only country in the world where you can truly achieve that dream. The second part of that, to me at least, is for us as those children, we've taken that work ethic, whether our parents intended it to happen or we just watched and learned, and that's made us who we are. And everything I'm hearing you say, that is the immigrant work ethic, the immigrant mentality, the child of an immigrant who brings that. My grandmother just passed away. She might not make it to the end of the party. I may not even be able to see her. Well, I have a job to do, and I'm going to do that job because that's, I don't know any other way.
Yep. I think, you know, I come from, you know, Indian parents who, you know, my mom in India was, you know, head of the Women's Rights Organization for the United Nations and led peaceful marches all around the world, you know, trying to, you know, advance women's rights. And that's actually how she met my dad, because my dad was a community organizer and and studying to be a reverend. And so he actually invited her to speak at one of his conferences, and that's how they met. And so my dad came here to this country with literally no money, brought my mom here, literally no money. My dad is in seminary school, you know, trying to you know, work his way through his master's to become a reverend. And my mom is working her master's, to, you know, in psychotherapy and social work. And so my mom would tell me stories that, you know, she didn't have enough money to take the bus, so she'd walk miles. She said, we didn't have enough money, so we had to eat a banana for the whole day. And we just cut it up into breakfast, lunch, and dinner, one banana. And they had nothing. And they built a life here with no handouts, no trust funds, nothing. And so I don't get the right to have a bad day. And I don't get the right to not work this hard when my parents did everything that they could to come to this country to give me this life. So I didn't come to this country. You know, my mom didn't work so hard to come to this country for me to not have a plan and not figure it out. And so
you owe that.
I owe that, you know, like, I will never have to eat a banana for a whole day because of them.
So I want to be respectful of your time because, of course,
another flight to catch.
Korea's catching a flight. So if you could tell everybody where to find you on social and how we can keep up with you.
Yeah. So you guys can visit my website, www.premonyevents.com. Follow us on Instagram at premonyevents.com. And you can follow my personal as well, Elizabeth Priya Kumar. That's where I do most of the shit talking. So and thank you so much for this opportunity.
Please. It's, thank you.
Honestly, this has been so much fun.
Love it. And one final thing. If we want to check out these plates, where social will be the best place?
Will be the best place. My Pradari will be launching next year. We're cultivating all the content for it now. So it's going to be great.
Awesome. Well, thank you
and
so much for coming.
You'll get your set in the mail as well.
I love it. Thank you so much for coming.
Of course.
It was really a pleasure. Thank you so much. And we'll be up on social soon.
All right, homie.
All right. Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening in. You can find us online at anthonyvasquezworkshops.com, as well as on social, on Instagram, Facebook, and on YouTube at Anthony Vasquez Workshops. We look forward to seeing you there.